You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com.
So hello, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 39 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, so things like moves and choreographies and combinations, it's really easy to find resources. But if you're looking for help with the why and the how, culture, musicality, professionalism, business, that can be harder to find. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we'll always have time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. For the first time, we have three guests with us on the call today, and my guests are the directorial team behind the Theatrical Belly Dance Conference in New York. First, we have Rania Renee of New York City, who began her performing career in theater and has been dancing since 1990. She tours internationally, teaching Egyptian dance and performance skills, and has created three popular instructional DVDs. Rania co-directs the New York Theatrical Belly Dance Conference, produces the classic Oriental Egyptian dance intensive, and has presented solo and company work at numerous events and conferences. She'll begin her new online-based programs in Egyptian dance and musicality in February. You can check her out at rania.net. Anasma is an Oriental fusion dance master teacher, performer, and choreographer, and also a singer, traveling around the world to share her art. With degrees in contemporary dance, yoga, business, and business management, she is the director of Anasma World Citizen Dance School and Productions, International Urban Belly Dance Collective, and the co-founder of the Theatrical Belly Dance Project. Currently based in France, she dances for hip-hop, modern jazz, theater, contemporary, and oriental companies. You can check her out at anasmadance.com and sohappyatwork.com. Kelly McKinnon is an actor-director based out of New York City. In her career, she's been lucky enough to work on a large range of styles from Shakespeare, including the American Globe Theater and the American Shakespeare Center, cabaret, including Rosemary and Thyme, a Bistro Award winner, and regional theater musicals and a film called Twig. She walked into Serena's studios in the early 1990s for some exercise and fell in love with the art of belly dance. Why don't I have Kelly and Rania tell us about how you get started in belly dance. Kelly, would you like to begin?
Sure. It actually was much more happenstance with me. I was already working as an actor. I had started off in musical theater and shifted into Shakespeare. And a friend of mine dragged me to a class, and she lasted for, I think, three classes, and I never left. I am an amateur in the true sense of the word, as somebody who does it for love instead of for money. So I think one of the reasons the three of us work well together is because we're this interesting Venn diagram where the overlap in the middle is huge, but we all attack it from very different perspectives.
Hello?
Because I'm primarily a theater director.
Yep, there's. I think that's Anasma.
Yes, that was
right. Yay, okay.
All right, wonderful.
So,
hi, everybody. Sorry.
Hi. Yeah, like it's been great to have Kelly on board with us because of her theater background and also because of her familiarity with the belly dance community. And but it's kind of she has a unique perspective because she's like the director, so she's a little bit like the outside eye for us also on the whole scene, whereas Anasma and I are much more enmeshed with the international belly dance scene, and so I think also we can contribute different perspectives, and she helps speak truth to us and we, it's very nice the way we are working together. And I think we all have a good sense of humor, so that helps.
Yes. All right. And Rania, would you like to tell us about how you got your start in belly dance?
Well, I started at a young age performing as an actor and comedy performer, an improv performer, and then director in theater, and I started belly dancing. I just took a class at the local rec center one time and just said, oh, I'll be doing this for exercise for the rest of my life. And even though I had taken dance classes as an actor, I trained in some forms of dance too, but belly dance was the first form that I felt really spoke to my body and that I felt, you know, welcome in and that I could do this. And it was really through that I became a dancer, which is, I think, different from Anasma's background. And so that's another difference between us and how we came to it. Like, for me, I'm really a belly dancer and primarily a belly dancer. And what I know about other dance forms is really through belly dance, through that lens of belly dance, because that was my route. And I think Anasma had a different experience because she's such a gifted and multi-talented dancer in so many different styles. I started teaching theatrical belly dance workshops early on, like in 1996, when I started teaching, I was also teaching theatrical skills because that was my strong background, was in theater, and so it's something really important for dancers. And then, you know, Anasma and I then later connected, and the rest is history. So Anasma can speak a little bit about her background too.
Thanks for the compliments, Rania. Hi. My start with belly dance was when I was 14. I was at my cousin's wedding. Half of my family is Tunisian, so it was a way for me, through dance, which was a passion for me already, to connect with my family and my roots. And when I went to this wedding, I decided I wanted to learn more about the culture and practice of the dance. And so now I'm 33, and I've been belly dancing for 19 years, and I've always been very curious of other art forms and dance styles also. So as a child, I studied theater, and also many other dance techniques, going from modern dance to hip-hop. I did salsa in my teen years, and then when I got to New York, I started studying many things. And now I have a contemporary dance degree, a technical degree, that says that one day, if I want to become a teacher in France, I have the technical level, and it's equivalent to coming out of the French Conservatory for contemporary dance. And I've been going back to a lot of academic dances lately, the past 4 years, because I felt the need to enrich this part of my dance and getting new sensations and new awareness of isolations and globality. But when I started defining my style, coming to New York, very naturally I worked with my theater background and dance. So that's how I started discovering who I was as an artist, and I analyzed pretty quickly that this was what made me special. And later on, I met Rania. I think I took a cycle of classes in New York that was really fantastic. It was about character development, and the first two classes that I took with Rania were Ho and then Bitch. And it was hilarious.
Bitch and Ho series.
But Bitch and Ho series. And so it was super cool. And when I was here with what I had to share with our community, I was curious to also start working with fellow dancers and artists who have shared this vision. And I thought about Rania, of course, and this is how we started working together. And that's back in 2008. Our first conversation was from then, I think.
Yeah. And we started the project in a small way, doing smaller events, and built it into the big conference that we have now. But we still try to keep true to the roots of exploring pedagogy, how to teach theatrical skills to dance performers, and how to for the teachers how to develop their material in that direction, because it's so much of a part of the performance is having the acting skills and the character and the narrative, and it just and just creativity, sourcing. Like, there's a whole lot of things that we cover at the conference that we want it to be as fruitful and productive for the teachers as for the attendees, and everybody's kind of mingling together, and so it's a pretty special melting pot that we have going on.
All right. Well, our topic for today is this idea of a narrative arc. So would you ladies like to tell us what that means exactly?
Let's let Kelly, the director, explain narrative arc.
Well, for me, any sort of performance you need to define in, to be the nerd that I am, and quote Aristotle's Poetics, very simply, it's going to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You're telling a story to an audience, and I think that works no matter what form of dance it is, because sometimes people don't think of, like, American Cabaret as telling stories, but the truly compelling performers are, whether you can understand what, I mean, because they're translating the music, and that's their job, is expressing a narrative arc through the music. So if any character ends a dance in the same mental, emotional, or physical place where they began it, then it's not quite an arc yet. And I'm afraid I'm going to get way too theatrical nerdy. I teach acting too, so it's I'm trying not to go into nerdy acting terms. So I'm throwing it over to Rania and Anasma.
I think that that idea, just the very simple idea of having a beginning, middle, and end, is like, what is the journey that the dancer is taking and how to lead the audience along that journey. And that, you know, that it has to be an interesting journey. Even if the music is repetitive, somehow you have to find a journey in what you're doing and be able to make it clear to the audience what that journey is. Even if they can't pin down exactly what it is, they have to be able to register that there was some development over the course of the piece, that it started in one place and it ended a different place, or maybe it starts in one place and it kind of ends in the same place, but then you've had this journey, so there's a kind of full circle. That's the idea of the arc, is that, like, it kind of goes up and then it comes down to the resolution, that there's a journey, there may be a conflict on the way, or some kind of a contrast, or some kind of interesting thing that happens, and then there's a resolution to the end. And, you know, that can be defined very broadly, but I think that it's possible that many dancers don't actually think about that. They think about the movements that are part of the story, they think about the character maybe, but they don't actually really set out to map what is the arc in this story. And I think some people have a natural knack for it, but it's always good to have a, you know, to sort of be able to spell it out for yourself. What is the journey that I'm making?
Exactly. And that's Kelly jumping in, because you don't need to understand the engineering specs of a roller coaster to ride the ride. And we want to ride the ride.
It should feel like a ride. You don't just get in your car and turn on the engine and stay put.
Yeah.
That's a good metaphor.
Got anything in Asma?
Yeah, I like this metaphor of how I had my music teacher who explains there's two things in what you said, the driving and also resolution. It's just like in music, you have a creation of a tension, and then in classical music, a resolution. So sometimes
tension.
The composer goes, well, that tension goes away or develops with modalities and tones that are neighbors, and it creates some dramatic tension, and then you resolve. And what is interesting, the metaphor he made with music is that in classical music, you arrive where your GPS told you. So, you know, you follow, you know, the path. In romantic music, you start going off to different cities on the way, and you have dinner in the city, and then, but in the end, you still finish at home. And then with contemporary music, you might not even end up where you had planned to go initially. And I think it's interesting when we talk about narrative arc, also what Rania said, that whether you go back to where you started or not, there is an up and a down. What feels important to me is that narrative arc doesn't mean it has to be a narrative, and it doesn't have to be a story that's readable from A to Z. There can still be a narrative arc with a theme that's very abstract.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be literal. And what is most important to keep is the idea of a journey and of transcending people somewhere else and having taught them something, but not necessarily spelling out with words and making things simplistic or very obvious. It can be more subtle and still be a journey. For me, what describes the arc is the up and the down, and as you said very well, the tension and resolution.
I think and I think that the more creative somebody is, they find ways of showing that journey that may be surprising to the audience. Like, I think if the audience knows exactly where it's going to go from the beginning, and then it goes there, then there's something not quite interesting about that. Like, you may lose the audience's attention in some way or lose their investment because there's not the suspense or the surprise. I think those are elements that, you know, I'd be curious to hear what Kelly thinks about this. I don't think they have to be part, I don't think surprise or that kind of a switcheroo, like oh my gosh, we didn't expect that to happen. I don't think that has to be a part of narrative arc, but I think that can show the creativity of the artist, and any of those little points of interest can grab people back in. But I think you need both. You need the narrative arc and then having those surprise elements, or having some creative approach that's not what people expect is kind of like the icing on the cake, the thing that makes it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's Kelly again. Something that both of you are hearkening to is a specificity in choices, that you're making a choice to make the narrative arc, and everything is essentially intellectually, emotionally, and artistically active, as opposed to, and you knew I was going to get this in somehow, because you've got moody lighting and you look like an angsty teen doesn't make something theatrical.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
The driving force underneath it. that's my own thing.
we do have a fair amount of people that, this is, Kelly is saying, like, we do get a lot of submissions to the conference that are very, like, dramatic, where people are really going to an intense place emotionally, and that isn't required for a piece to have a theatrical foundation that's solid, that it's not just about showing emotion, whether it's, strong love emotion or strong angst and despair or moodiness, but that these other things are more important, I think, in some ways than what mood the piece is. Kelly is making that comment because she wants to see more upbeat pieces that people submitting this year so that we keep things on a lighter tone for some of the shows. But that's her agenda, but it's true.
Agenda is to have, because I tend to look at everything through a director's eye, and especially because of my background in Shakespeare, people don't fall for things if they're beaten to death with depression. And so you want that sort of roller coaster of an evening where the powerful pieces are more powerful, being offset by the release of laughter or joy. They're all viable parts of an evening.
That's another point towards contrast, that it's important to have contrast. And I don't know that it's necessary for every single piece that there be high contrasting elements within the piece, but for sure there's an arc to an evening, to a show also, that is, it may not be a linear narrative arc because it's a whole bunch of different pieces that different artists made, but we think about the arc when we're creating the show, like what kind of a note we want to end on, and, you know, not putting too many dark pieces in a row, but, you know, not putting a serious piece right after a hilarious piece also. Like, somehow you have to kind of manage the audience's mood. So I think that's a part of building the arc also, even within a piece, is, and it may, but it, I want to say that, like, when I'm creating a piece, I don't necessarily know what the narrative arc is going to be at the beginning of it. And I think that we should maybe also talk about a little bit about process, that when we're creating, it might not be the narrative arc that makes or breaks it. I mean, you might have an idea. I've created pieces, I've created pieces where I knew where I wanted it to start and I knew where I wanted it to end from the beginning. And then I created around that. And I may know what the stops are on the way. But then I've also created pieces just by, like, getting into it and figuring out, like, okay, where am I going to go with this? And I remember, like, early in my career when I was doing some pieces to Arabic pop songs. Pop songs can be a little repetitive. And so what I really did was learn the lyrics of the music and to help that give me a motivation for what the arc is. Because even in a repetitive pop song, there is some kind of a journey in the lyrics, at least, like, you know, so that you can actually act out in some way that journey, even if it's not a big difference in terms of the steps, that there might be a bigger emotional difference from beginning to end. So there's different ways to inspire that narrative arc.
Yes, I agree with...
I'd like to take a step back for just a second.
Yep.
I'd like to take a little step back for a second, because I think one thing that I'd really like to get some clarity on around this is that, you know, you pointed out that the journey of a narrative arc isn't necessarily a series of overt plot points, the way that it would be in, say, like a classical ballet, where we're telling the story of Swan Lake that has specific scenes where specific actions are taking place. But it sounds like that journey can take different changes in emotion, different changes in mood, different changes in tension versus relief. Is there anything else that you feel like really clearly belongs in that journey? Or the another type of journey you could take?
Well, the movement, you know, maybe big or versus small movement, or, you know, small to big to back to small could be a journey. Busy to you know, calm, back to busy, or calm to busy to calm could be an arc.
And also,
yeah, so that movement
more...
quality, what you're talking about, Nanya.
What, say it again,
Nanya? You talked about changing the qualities and of movement, so giving contrast in how you design your dance and the way you write it. So big to small, you have it could be also a spatial level, occupying little space or big space.
Yeah.
It could also be a voyage along one specific route. Let's say I start on the upstage left corner and I have to do the whole piece on this one diagonal to hit downstage left, or whatever the other thing that I said. So maybe this is a spatial journey that is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, I mean, it's almost sort of a mindset. It doesn't matter how esoteric the journey is or how abstract. as long as there's a mindset of that you're sharing the journey with the audience and not just doing it for your own edification. Because I feel like sometimes when things get a little too internal, then we can't see the journey. And you need to be able to convey that to an audience.
You have to.
Yeah, there's
amount
of. Oh, go ahead, Rania.
Oh, I was going to say, and different people are different in that. Some people project effortlessly, and some people have to work at it a little more. So it's always good to have a second eye on what you're doing to make sure that people are registering the changes that you're experiencing as part of that journey. Or videotape yourself also, and you can kind of, be a critical eye on your own work. It's impossible to tell when you're in it to evaluate if it's coming across. You have to either videotape yourself and step outside and look at it, or have somebody else look at it to see, like, well, is this change coming through? Because that may take practice for people who are newer to working this way, or aren't sure if it's coming across. And some people, they project so much that it's like, okay, you need to pull it back in. Like some people, their normal is whacking people on the head over with a hammer, because it's like they're so easily projecting that they can rein it in a little bit and they'll still project. So each person, I think, has their own flavor about that. So that's something to take into account too.
It's interesting Kelly said about the mindsets, because you can decide to actively want to share or not. And I still think that a piece can be very interesting even if the performer isn't sharing at all. It can also be very intimate and interesting.
But it has to register on the outside.
How much you give, and you can decide, you can control those things. And for sure, an outside eye will help with this. It's just... if you decide to keep it very internal, just be conscious about this. And to go back to what Kelly said earlier, it has to be a choice. It has to be something that you decide. And if you decide to go over the top, then it also could be something you decide. And if you need an outside eye to get help to make sure that you reach your goal, it's excellent to do that. But what I mean is that sometimes... it doesn't have to necessarily need to connect, and it's super important to connect with yourself before you connect with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Connecting to your own body, to your intention, and I think this is, to me, it's the base to even starting to project with other people.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know where you are with yourself and with what you want to say in your narrative arc or whatever you choose as a theatrical way, even if you just develop the character without the narrative or arc, whatever it is, just be clear with what you want. And when you're clear with what you want, then you have a better chance to reach that goal.
I love that. And exactly what you said is that as long as it's a choice, you got to make that choice.
Yes.
But I also think that you could just put it out there, videotape, or have somebody look at it, see what works the strongest, and then you can kind of hone your choices afterwards. Like, I think there's more than one way to create a piece, and sometimes, working from the outside in, these are things that we always incorporate in the conference workshops, like, is our approach from the outside in or from the inside out? And both of those can work, as long as you can, gauge the overall effect. And I mean, in an improvised performance, you still have a narrative arc, I think, but it's on the spot. And so there's still, if it's a good performance and if you're good as an improv artist, you're able to create that narrative arc in the choices that you make on the spot. So you may not know what the journey is on the way, but at the end, there's going to be a big pose, and that is, that's the arc. Like, there has to be a, when you have a drum solo in a dance show, like, the drum solo is usually right before the finale, because it's the climax. It's the most activity. So that, in that sense, that's built into the music. And what Anasma was saying before, that a lot of these things are built into the music, I think a lot of dancers could take much more advantage of listening to the music and seeing where are the conflict points, where are the tension and resolution moments, where does the music go on a little different journey, like with the bridge, because those are the stopping points on your arc. And if everybody in the audience is hearing the same music that you are, they're going to be led to kind of make sense of that too, along with what they're seeing from you.
I agree with this, and I think it's important to do a musical mapping. Also, when you're improvising, you can also jump with a little bit of a fishnet if you know the music a little bit, rather than not at all. Of course, it's taking way more risk. But on the other hand, it's also very interesting to not necessarily follow the music. So if instead of, and this I learned from my theater teacher, it's le contrepoint, so not doing what is expected, exactly what you were saying earlier about creating surprise, that sometimes everybody waits for you to do a set part of the development in your story because the music has changed. But, well, no, you're going to react differently. And this is what creates décalage, like not a delay, a space, something interesting.
Attention
that
also.
Is just unexpected. Attention, voilà. Yes. That's it. And also another thing I wanted to say about the process that is very important that you mentioned, Rania, that we can enter and create a narrative arc, but we don't have to start from there. For me personally, for many years, I defined my work as theatrical, and I would only start from the storyline, storytelling, and this journey. But then I have to allow myself to enter from other ways, which sometimes is movement research or just feeling emotional with a certain music, or it can just be the idea of a character, but not necessarily know from the beginning where you start and where you go. Sometimes it's very nice to just let yourself surprise by what's coming out of you naturally through improvisation as you're developing your piece, and not necessarily force. You don't even have to force the landmarks along the way. You don't have to force that, you know. Of course, it helps structure the music or the piece when you know that, oh, such phase of the music is 4 counts of 8, and then I have so many counts of 8 to tell the next part of the story. But it's also important to feel free to go beyond those things that can structure you and that can sometimes block you. If you need to only put the narrative at the end, and sometimes it happened to me that I found my real narrative arc and structure, like as I was on stage after I had rehearsed for 2 or 3 months, and it only came to me when I had everything, so the audience and the adrenaline, and all of a sudden I looked at the audience in this particular moment of the piece that I didn't choreograph, just because I was there with them projecting, and it revealed itself and it made sense in my story that oh, perfect, this is exactly what I wanted to say. So sometimes, without forcing it, it just comes to you, and it's very important to give that space and not decide everything always, all the time, and just be in the present moment as you build things, and you still know where you want to go, but let yourself go on a segue when you're creating, because sometimes the detour is more important than just going to the destination at once.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I'll say a quick, that is perfect, because that is exactly what any sort of rehearsal should be, is to eradicate your boundaries and just throw the spaghetti at the wall to see if it sticks. And if it doesn't, then you try something else.
Okay. Throw the spaghetti at the wall to see if it sticks. I was going to say... One thing, like some of you know that I just got my master's in psychology, studying cognitive science and the way people think and perceive. And humans are uniquely structured to, like, our brains are structured to make narrative and to make sense out of the world, make meaning in a storyline, in a narrative way. And if you think about it, just kind of notice, even in the course of your day, like how many times you make sense of something, or when people say, like, oh, that was meant to happen, or like, oh, well, that was your journey, you were meant to go on that journey, or the universe sent you in that direction. So there's a kind of human tendency to look at things in terms of a journey from the past to the present. So there's a forward motion of time that we use to structure our view of reality. So when you're performing for humans, because cats are not like this. I have two great cats, but they don't have a great sense of past and present. And maybe they have our cats or dogs. Like, I mean, I perform for my cats all the time, but it's like in terms of smell, maybe a dog or a cat can remember, oh, where did I last smell that thing or that person? But that's a very primitive sense. And humans also have, you know, more parts of our brain to really to try to make sense of the past to the present in a more complex way. So all of your human members of the audience will be trying to make sense of what you're doing. And it helps if you are a little bit ahead of them on that, so that you are leading them, even if you don't seem to have a heavy hand about it, that you are leading them with the storyline. And it could be something that just comes out spontaneously, or it could be something you've pre-planned. And I want to think about, like, let's say, I don't know, let's say you just go, you're traveling, let's say, and you're one of those people who's an intrepid traveler, and you go to another country, and you talk to people, and you meet new people in that country, and they say, hey, we're going to the sea, you want to come with us? Sure, I'll go to the sea. And then you have an adventure, and they take you, you know, surfing or whatever, and then you surf, and then, you know, something happens, and, you know, whatever, and then you build a bonfire. So that's a journey that's sort of unfolding as it goes. And then afterwards, you can tell the story of what happened that day. And if you're a good storyteller, you can tell it as an arc, that we started the day this way, and we ended up at this amazing bonfire by the sea. But you could also start with a plan, like, I'm going to do this today. We're going to go see this. Then we're going to go see this. Then we're going to go see this. Then we're going to have a nice dinner at the end. So it's like, no matter what, there's going to be a storyline and making sense of it, because that's the nature of humans. And I just want to say one other thing is that from my cognitive science studies, I took a great course called Language and Thought, where the teacher was also interested in music. And he noted all these ways that music is similar to language. And music moves forward just like language does. Like, there's a forward direction of music. There's a forward direction of language. So it's unfolding over time, getting the message across gradually over time. And so we can use these tools to our advantage to propel the storyline forward, because all humans are really on the same page with that, cognitively speaking. How's that for a nerd moment, Kira?
I'm sorry, a couple people talking at once. All right. So this is some great stuff, and I think one thing I'd like to do is to pull on one of the threads that Anasma brought up, which is, you know, how do you get started? How do you enter this process, or where can you look for inspiration?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood everything.
Where do you look for inspiration?
Did you ask me, how do I start?
So Anasma mentioned some great kind of beginning tips. So if you're, you know, going to be approaching a piece, how could a dancer get started in the process of creating a narrative arc?
As we mentioned earlier, there's many points of entry. You can make it grow in a very organic way if it comes from inside out, as we used those terms earlier. Let's say inside out could be a sensation, or improvising with there's still a departure point. It's it could be a music that you love, or one theme that you're interested in, or it could, you know, come from, it has to start from somewhere, always. Even the way you're creating is a narrative arc. And because you start from somewhere, you develop it, and then you have your piece. So that's it. But the starting point can be a desire that comes from inside of you, or a film that inspired you, a book that you've read. It could be a TV show. It could be a conversation with a friend. It can be a new course you're taking on music or cognitive science. It can be something that's happening on the street today, or your cat. And it can be really anything. And sometimes it comes from the outer world, when a festival asks you for a specific theme, or you have an exercise for class that your teacher is asking you to work with such and such constraints. Because of marketing, people know me for hip-hop belly dance, and I have to give them one more piece of that. So I'm forced, in a way, by the audience or expectations, to hit a certain level or a certain language. So it's interesting to, once again, be conscious of how personal are decisions you make and how things come from the outside world and the impulse, and it's always going to be a dialogue. Because if you want your message to come across, then it's better to speak at least a few words, words of vocabulary that your audience knows. Like when Rania travels and goes to Japan, she's going to learn Japanese, and then if we make humor in class, then the Japanese dancers are going to laugh because we know a few words. So it was fantastic when we did that trip together. So, yes, that is to say, once again, take care of yourself. Make sure you don't just create for other people's expectations. And if you do have to create for other expectations, what do you want to bring? What do you want to say? What is your approach about it? What is your little surprise? And how do you put your touch as an artist and as a human being, speaking to other human beings who are going to make sense of out of your story? And about this thing that Rania said earlier, that we always try to make sense, I think it's very true. You always walk in an experience with your past experiences, but sometimes it's nice to just ignore what you knew and just start from scratch if possible. But it's natural that when I walk in a ballet class as a belly dancer, then I'm going to try to understand how they move their hips as a belly dancer, and then little by little I might, you know, drop my belly dancer's habit and just go in another mindset and another totally different track, and not try to always bring what I knew from the past. It's going to be stronger than me that I do this, but if I also want to learn something very different, I might want to try something without comparing it to the past.
I was going to say, like, I think, like, the music is a good starting point. If you have a piece, I mean, a lot of dancers start with a piece of music that they like and they want to dance to it. And the more you can learn about the piece, if it has words, follow the lyrics. The lyrics will help you tell a story, and you could tell it in an abstract way or in a more literal way. If it's an instrumental piece, there may be things in the music that call up certain feelings in you or even certain memories. I started working with a technique. Well, I've been working with this for a long time, just unconsciously, but I started actually teaching this, which I call movie trailer technique. So you have like a whole bunch of scenes from a movie that all the different moments of the music that you're dancing to are like little scenes. And I have images that just pop into my mind that go with those scenes. It could be from a past romantic relationship, or it might be, walking on the beach or some scene, or acting out a storyline, or falling rain, some kind of an image. And you can just have a kind of jumble of narrative and more like emotional elements that are kind of mixed in, and then, you know, the music can lead you on that path if you really listen for those details in the music to create kind of landmarks that may help you shape that narrative.
I like that a lot.
Movie trailer. Maybe I'll
take
it.
So you allow yourself to brainstorm. Basically.
Yeah, like what does the music tell me at this point? You know, sometimes it's like, oh, this music makes me feel like a princess, or this music makes me feel like, you know, like a gangster, or this music makes me feel like a sunshine or rainstorm, or like I'm running in a field of flowers. And then those things can the audience doesn't have to know about each of these points, but if it creates a progression of emotions in you, then that's the important thing. It's not that the audience has to really know everything that's inspiring you, but that that there's something interesting that's developing over the course of your piece, that there's a development in you over the course of your piece. And if you have things like lighting or props or, you know, stage, space, you know, different people in the group, all those things are like the group you. Like, you can include the lighting and your relationship to the lighting, because that creates a mood. So it's not that you necessarily have to do everything in the course of developing that narrative if you have other things in the environment that are helping you. But anyway, those are some ideas to start with.
I agree with you that, for example, you can have a relationship with the light. The spot could be your prison, or it could be your lover. It could be another character that you imagine is on stage. I have in the Fallen Angel piece, the spotlight is God, so the light coming from up there. And in another version of the development of that character, the light is Faust, so the victim. So, you know, you can give meaning to lights. You can also, sometimes you realize you actually need someone else to be on stage with you in order to make, like, to make your point clearer. That sometimes we're obstinated with working in solo or trying to make things across with objects or things, when the easiest way to understand, to make your story visible or understood, is to have another person come in and manipulate some props, and then we understand that you're not, master of your own life or something like this. For instance, we developed a piece that we presented in Belly Fusions this weekend. It was the 8th and last edition in Paris. It's a festival promoting fusions of Oriental dance with anything we want. And I was doing a new creation with Linda Soro and Bamboo, with both guys, in the Urban Belly Dance, International Urban Belly Dance Collective. And the piece we chose was a game, a social game. And we wanted to show that we were manipulated, or let's say, the very first rehearsal, we started with the idea. It started from the music, and we started developing the idea that maybe we're not masters of our own destiny, and we want to be in control, and sometimes we realize we just cannot, and that's, that there's powers over us. And 3 months later, when we met again to keep going with the creation, the music imposed a certain vision to me about the storyline, and for me it was a society game, and so we had to reuse and convert the first theme to what we were starting to develop now. So it's okay to keep layering things to try to make sense. As if you have an exquisite corpse game, that sometimes you start from the first idea, and as you said earlier, Rania, that you're trying to make sense with whatever's coming next. And
Because people are going to evaluate
what... Yeah, so that narrative started shifting.
People are going to evaluate what they see now in the context of what they just saw.
Right.
So,
and
Kelly...
Yeah.
No, I was going to say...
What is that noise?
Go ahead, Kelly.
No, is that my phone? Sorry, I'm on a primitive home phone,
stopped,
guys.
Though.
Okay.
But when I'm working with younger actors, like when I'm teaching at NYU, one of the first things I'll do is look for the very first piece we work on. We're looking for something that resonates with them, because then it's easier to attack. I don't care if it's an outside, I don't care whether they come at it from language, they come at it from a play that they've seen and they want to participate in that world, whether it's a piece of music that they bring in to me and they say, I need to find something that I can express this. I think the important thing is to find that first thing is something that resonates with you and explore it and give yourself a chance to fail, because you can't find what works until you fall on your face with what doesn't. And so, we've all dealt with how I fall, but I've been practicing yoga for about 20 years, and I was taught that falling is a part of yoga because you haven't explored all the way unless you've fallen on your face in forearm stand.
Yes.
So give yourself permission to fail. Find something that resonates.
And take risks.
Exactly.
And it's only because you fall that you will know what is your limit today, and maybe tomorrow you will not fall because you'll learn how to go further to manage this imbalance. And, all right, let me find this trick. And so you get to know yourself better through mistakes and making them and allowing yourself. So, and sometimes
instead of beating yourself up.
Exactly. And we don't need to do this. And also, we don't need to be attached absolutely to one theme that, if you're blocked somewhere, that means it's not the way today. And you just have to find another entrance, another door.
Yeah, and who knows
maybe
what
it's
that
another
would
door
be.
For the next 3 years, you know, not just for the day.
Yeah.
Maybe,
you need to
this old way of working doesn't work now.
I was going to say, sometimes you need to feel out how it's going to hit with the audience, like how you can feel the energy of the audience change. So there's a lot of pieces that you're not really going to know how successful it is until you're in front of a live audience. So that's why it's really good to workshop things in front of even a few friends or colleagues or a teacher that you trust, to just feel what is their, because you can hear their breathing. How does what you're doing affect the audience's breathing? Because if they're, you know, in suspense or, you know, if there's a resolution, you're going to feel it in the room. And this takes practice, I think. Like, I remember a lot of moments when I was a young actor where I would feel the audience and just feel their reaction to what I was doing. So it's kind of like you're in your own moment, but because you're performing in front of a live audience, you're also aware of how it's hitting them and where their focus is and if they're focused. So sometimes those things just, they do take practice, you know, and that's part of the taking risks, is like that you're going to learn a lot when you have it in front of people, even if it's scary at first, but then so that you can feel where the trigger points are in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I was thinking... go ahead, Nadir.
One thing that I would really love is a couple of examples. Would any of you like to give just some of the details of some of the narrative arcs that you've used in your own dance and how you created that progression and that journey?
I could talk very briefly about the piece I did with my group Makamikaze in 2003, I want to say. 2002, I guess, is when I created it. And it's online. If you look up Alf Layla Walayla in the Library, or if you do a search for Rania Renee, it's on YouTube, and it's like the one with the school girls and the librarian. And there's a transformation in that piece. And I basically just really mapped out the music. And the way it started, I guess people can look it up on YouTube. So the beginning of Alf Layla is like, bum, 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 da-na-na-na-na, bum, 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 da-na-na-na-na. And then it goes like, bum, bum, da-na-na-na-na. So being a little crazy, I heard like books banging together during the bum, bum, da-na-na-na-na, just like books, like people banging books together. And that's how that story evolved. And at the time that I was creating it, I went to Italy by myself. I have friends there, and I was spending like a lot of time drinking cappuccinos in the cafe, very good cappuccinos, I might add, and listening to Alf Layla Wa Layla on my CD player and, you know, marking off the changes in the music and just creating the storyline from that, this relationship between the schoolgirls and the librarian, which is what I played, and how she leads them on a kind of journey, and they're all led on a journey, and then at the very end it's like, whoa, what kind of journey did we just go on? And I think it was and people liked the piece. It was a lot of work to get the timing of it and everything correct, but I think that one just sort of unfolded with this from this idea of books banging together. That was just the initial thing on the rhythm. And then because I was in Italy with visiting a friend of mine who's a famous mask maker, I had access to all these amazing, colorful masks. And so I incorporated those into the piece. I got a couple of his masks, and I incorporated those into the piece as part of the transformation. And people who have seen my work know that I like to do a lot of costume transforming. That's like something, and props appearing out of my pants and things like that. And, you know, not that kind of props. People, calm down. But I don't know. I like that idea of constant unexpected transformation. And, you know, whatever you're around can give you inspiration. I mean, this is why it's good to try to find as much inspiration around you, even in, you know, the little things. Like if I hadn't been visiting my mask maker friend at the time I had to come up with this piece, maybe the masks wouldn't have been part of the piece. Maybe something else would have been part of the piece. And then, you know, I don't know. So that's like one example that people can look at online and see like how I created a storyline. But I feel like that was a more theatrical storyline, like explicitly theatrical storyline. But I think that I have a storyline when I'm dancing a traditional set also that just unfolds partly from my inspiration that I'm taking from the audience, like what's their mood, what's my relationship to them, and I just try to pull things out of the air to throw into the show because we're all breathing the same air. And that's how you get people. People are already invested because they're all breathing that air. And so if they're breathing the air and you pull something out of that air, they're part of it. You're pulling something out of them too, what they're breathing. So it keeps people invested. It keeps people feeling like they're a part of the action. So that's something you can do on the spot, or you can just create this interesting narrative that's sort of more stylized and set.
And Asma, do you have something that's more abstract that you could speak to how that emerged?
Yeah, I was choosing, as Rania was giving this example, what I want to talk about, and should I choose a very narrative? I have two experiences I could talk about. Also, I'll try to keep it brief. The first one will be more abstract. I've been working with a fantastic dancer, Arnaldo Yasorli from Madrid. He's an Afro-contemporary claquette, oriental dancer, samba dancer. He teaches wonderfully, and he's also a choreographer. And so we wanted to present a new creation for one of our trips, so Poland, and Arnaldo came in with the idea of starting the piece with a pair of shoes that is pulled in on stage with two, like, fisher's net thread. So you just see two shoes that are coming, and from there we just let ourselves improvise in the process and get to know each other because it was our first collaboration. And so we had 3 days of artistic residency, not knowing exactly where we were going, but we just let ourselves, we defined what we want to say together, and it was talking about our friendship and our, we feel like brothers and sisters. And so we started then looking for common things that we can say with our different bodies and vocabularies, and also common vocabularies, and we came out with porté sections and combinations that would work together. And then it was just very movement-based and very aesthetic, and then little by little it started making sense with the idea of the shoes and putting it on and off and passing each other the shoe. And when the more we rehearsed it, and the more the characters started to become clear, and something that put them into life were really the skirts that we had. It looks like Scottish fabric, and both of us have the same. So all of a sudden, we look like small kids with a uniform. And it made sense with the first thing that we wanted to say, which was brother and sister. And so it's interesting because we let ourselves go, not loosely, let's say, but then little by little, the narrative grew on us, let's say. And now we have moments of teasing each other, of having conflict and fighting for the shoe and giving it to the other, taking it back. And in the end, we have a resolution, walking away together with the shoes, both of us with them, and it just came as we created it, and we didn't force anything, so it feels very organic, and that's how, for me, it started from something abstract and not clear to being clear, and I really, now I like this process of letting things happen more naturally. And the other experience that I have, I wanted to say that the narrative arc for a piece is a different thing from a narrative arc for a show. As Rania said, when you're doing a set for a belly dance, you might want to finish with a drum solo. It's the high note. When you do a big, long show, also usually you have, you know, the strong act is the closing act. But within a piece, maybe you don't want to finish on a strong note, you want to finish on something that comes down again. So it's interesting also to work on longer work, because it's very different to build a 5-minute piece from 15 minutes, 30, and then 60 minutes. And it was very different when I was starting to work. I really wanted to do a longer show connecting all my different characters, and those that I felt like I've created throughout all those years, different characters that I felt has a common point, but I wasn't sure yet what story I would say to link them together, to tell. So it was the little devil. And then I had Charlie Chaplin, who's protesting about the world we live in. And so another character was the love soldier, who's also deciding to fight for his beliefs. And the fourth character that could fit out of all the different characters I've created through my career and experience was the, I call her liquid fusion, whatever. And each time I've danced hip-hop belly dance, it turns out that I always came with this theme of questioning who I am, society, and... So, and then something else happened at that time where I had this desire to create the show linking the characters that I still have specific beliefs about, like political and geopolitical beliefs. some of the things that I read right now directed me towards the book 1984, which I read when I was a kid, and now having this newer understanding of the world and how I question things, it made sense when I read the book. I'm like, this is my show. I see the values that are reversed. This is the devil for me. And when I see Winston, who is one of the rebels, and he just starts questioning Big Brother, this was my Liquid character, and I felt like I was the consciousness of this character. Being Charlie Chaplin is another rebel and is connected to the past, and in 1984, all the idols from the past and any past history is destroyed to create the present and the future of tomorrow. It starts from today's lives. So it was very interesting to build from starting from a narrative that didn't necessarily start from me, but from also literature can be very nourishing. But everything, I really worked very intensely for 6 months on putting everything together, all the pieces of the puzzle, working with actors and dancers for different scenes. But really, I feel it's the work of the past 5 years, because the devil has developed itself throughout many different ways, and Charlie Chaplin also had, you know, two or three ways of being developed, and then there were other layers. Composing the whole soundtrack was my musical composer and producer, with whom I've recorded my music CD. So I got to write lyrics and say the text in music. So yeah, it was a very rich process, and this one was less abstract, but really based on a story. Sorry, I speak a lot.
That's usually when it's getting good. All right. And Kelly, do you have any examples of a narrative arc that you think would be a good example, whether it's through dance or another medium?
Well, I tend to approach things through text, being primarily Shakespeare-based, but that's also where I tend to define what a narrative arc is for myself. And we can go traditional inciting incidents, rising action, blah, 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 that you can look up in an English book. Or, I mean, one of my favorite things is I've been working with composers on new musical works, as in musical theater musicals. And it ties into everything that Rania and Anasis are saying. You look for the variance, you look for the exploration. Nothing should be a flat line. If you really want the audience to fall in love with someone, then often you need to use humor to get it. You can't expect someone to feel pathos or have a cathartic moment if you've beaten them down the entire time. It's the variance in a piece that's going to create the depth of a character and a story to me.
Oh, and can I just make a note that they're, cognitively speaking, our brains are wired to detect change.
Yeah.
So it's like once people get very comfortable with something, it's easy for them to sort of maybe lose interest just get too comfortable with it. So if you want to keep them invested constantly, there has to be some change, I think. And I think that the way that we're conditioned today with the internet age and our smartphones and constant distraction, people are probably more sensitive to that now than ever before. And that people are, you know, if you look at the ads on the internet or, you know, flashing lights or, you know, somebody was despairing telling me, like, oh, all the fan veils have LED lights on them now, and the wings have lights on them, and the dervish costumes have lights on them, like just to grab the audience, like here's something new, here's something fresh. And so I think that that's something that we need to keep in mind, too, that our audience is always going to be attracted by something that grabs their attention because it's different from what came before.
Yes. An example is that if you receive with regularity 100 slaps in a row that are very regularly, probably you won't notice after a while. But if you just get one super violent slap, then you're going to notice.
All right.
This is why it's
important.
I'd
actually like you to put
people
on your conference director. Sorry, go ahead, Rania.
No, I was going to say that's why it's important to really listen to your music and see where the changes are in the music, because you can really take advantage of those to magnify those.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now I think I'd like you to put on your conference director hat. And because I
yes.
know one thing that you ladies have to do is look through performance proposals. So can you
yep.
give anybody advice on how to describe their narrative arcs in an effective way when they're trying to get a spot in the show?
We are actually, we were hoping to have all of this up for people by the time of this call, and for various reasons, we will have it up very soon, some technical difficulties kind of, and just our finalizing our, you know, descriptions so that everybody is on an even footing when they apply to the conference, that everybody has the same information so that it's a fair process. But I think we are looking for, obviously we're looking for strong dance technique, and also that there's a storyline to it, that there's some kind of interest. I mean, I think that we have had people apply to the conference before that were very strong dancers, but they didn't give us a sense of this narrative arc, and we, you know, actually, I should say everybody who applies, we are going to make every effort to place somebody in one of the shows. So this is, if you have work that you want to show, apply, because we have an open stage as well as a theater, a big fancy theater space, as well as a really nice nightclub space with lighting. We have these different venues for showcasing different levels of work in terms of the professional quality of it and the story. But I think that what certainly we appreciate is when people have thought about these things in their proposals and that we can see evidence of it in their videos, because obviously the videos are the most important part of the submission. To be able to demonstrate that you have a command of that is something that will help in terms of making the cut for the theater show or the theaterish nightclub show. However, we really welcome everybody's work, you know, because I think it's a chance to workshop your pieces at the conference too. So I think that in general, we've found a place for everybody who wants to perform, who gets to us early enough, you know, so that, you know, obviously you have to apply the earlier the better, first come, first served. But it will be rolling admissions this year. So this is a little different from the way we've done it in previous years. As soon as we open admissions, which will be very, very soon, I keep saying it's going to be within a few days, but I think it will be in a few days, and or a week. And, you know, once that happens, just apply as soon as you can, because then we will take the pieces that are appropriate for each venue and assign people a spot. But, you know, we're looking forward to everybody's efforts in this, like no matter what level of professional experience or hobbyist or amateur experience you have, we think that it's never too early to begin that journey in creating interesting work. And I want to stress also that we like having a mix of traditional and experimental, and we like having a mix of light and dark. As Kelly mentioned before, it doesn't all have to be super serious and dramatic. Like some of it, we've had some really funny pieces that people have created, things that are really out of the box. We're looking for a diverse array of performers from all backgrounds and genders and ages, because we really want to see what people have to offer. It makes our conference richer to have that range of experiences and styles on our stage that people can, it inspires the audience, it inspires the attendees, and it inspires us as teachers. you know, some of the pieces that have been the most inspiring to us were not even necessarily all the professional pieces. Like, we've seen some works from amateur groups and performers that were just so creative that we were blown away. So I think, you know, once we have the criteria up, you're going to submit, you know, video that shows what level of work you can produce, and then an idea for the work that you want to present if it's not the same as the video. And we may ask people to submit more than one idea just in case we like what they're offering, but then there may be something else that fits the program better. Like, if we have a whole lot of dark pieces, then we may want somebody to put together a light piece if they're open to, you know, more than one option for them to perform. Kelly, did you want to add to that?
I think you covered everything. I do want to emphasize that that showing, you don't need to show a half-rehearsed piece because that's the one you want to submit. You're better off showing what your skill level is and what your artistic ability is and your vision, and then telling us about the piece you want to create.
Some people will be presenting pieces that they have performed already, and they have a video of that piece in performance, like in another part of the world or another part of the country. We generally like to have things that are new to New York because it's good for our local audience. We sometimes make exceptions to that if there's a good reason. But, you know, something that people have been workshopping and gradually changing over the years could be something that we would like to have, but I do think we like to have stuff that's fresh, if possible, to New York City or the New York area. But, you know, that said, we're trying to create really interesting, diverse shows. And so, we want to see, like, the level of performance that people are capable of providing us. And then if they want to come up with a new proposal that they then work on before the show, then that's definitely welcome. I think the main idea is the main decision is this performer going to, which show does this performer fit best in? And then, you know, giving them that slot. And I think people have been pretty happy with all of our performance opportunities, slots at the conference, whether it's been in the theater or the nightclub or in the studio at the open stage area, because it's a nice studio. And we're going to have it set up extra special this year and have an evening show that involves the open stage so that people don't have to necessarily run and change their costumes in between classes. So I think it's going to be even more special, and it's just such a meaningful experience for us to see people, you know, pushing the boundaries of what they do, and whether it's in a more traditional realm or in a more experimental realm, to just see where people's creativity is going and how they've been inspired to put something together for us.
All right. And looking at this in a more general case. Oh, go ahead and ask.
Sorry, I just wanted to add two more things. Thank you. That we make space for everybody, and the purpose of the conference is to learn how to perform and better ourselves as performers. So, of course, getting a space to practice it, whatever your level is a great way to make sure you're, you know, applying what you're learning directly. So it's really wonderful to have this. Little precision also, just to clarify, when Rania said earlier that we have, I don't know if it came across like this for some of our people, our listeners who are listening to this, but also the nightclub is absolutely charming and looks extremely professional. What will determine what sends you to one stage or the other is maybe how much space you need. If we feel in the video that you are a huge mover, then there's a big chance. I mean, we don't know yet about this, but according to... also, if it's a group that needs more space, or if the group does super isolated work that doesn't need much movement, then sometimes we arrange and we make those decisions also according to what we can feel from the videos. It's a big movement, or I mean, big spatial user are more static, and it's okay. And you can be a fantastic dancer dancing on the spot, so it doesn't mean anything.
I think it's that bigger picture. Yeah. We have that bigger picture of the shows that we're constructing a whole show, and so hopefully people will trust our instincts about it, because we have to keep in mind a lot of things when we're putting together the shows. It's a big effort.
And one last thing about where there are spaces to perform. You mentioned the big theater, the nightclub, the restaurant also with a stage, and the open stage.
Well, no, we're not going to be there. We're not going to be there this year.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, we're creating a new open stage carnival evening, so which will be at the studios if things go well. But it'll be a nice environment, and I think it's going to be a pretty special night. I'm kind of glad that we got the opportunity to do that. Oh, I wanted to say one other thing. This is a belly dance conference.
The last thing that I wanted to say is the coaching, and that's also an important place where you can get feedback also, like, at the conference and perform your piece for a certain number of teachers that are here, and this pilot program has worked really well in the past, and we're very happy to offer this because we think it's very special to be able to be coached for one of the it's a shorter piece. Usually it's a 2-minute piece, but it's the occasion also to perform for some teachers that will help you and guide you on how to improve that particular performance.
Well, as part of the submissions process also, people will have the option of getting feedback from us on their videos and on their performance so that we can give them some things to work on before the conference if they apply and if they select that they want comments from us. And in the past, we've offered that. This year it's going to be an optional thing, and there will be a little extra fee for that, but we're trying to keep it very reasonable, and I think it will be a great opportunity for people who want to get feedback from us on things that they can work on even before the conference, and then they can get feedback at the conference too. So I think it's basically like there are so many competitions in our field right now, and this is not what we want to do. I've judged competitions, and Asma's judged competitions. I know there's a place for that in our community, but what we care about is people's development as artists, and no matter what level that they're at. And so we want to help people on that journey so that they just keep bringing better and better work to the stage. So that's a very big part of our mission at the conference, and so there will be opportunities for that. I wanted to also just make a note that it's a belly dance conference, and so when people make a proposal, it's got to have some connection to belly dance. And so, you know, we do take that into account in deciding about the pieces. So even if something is a fantastic piece, we want to see something that is related to belly dance. And I think that it's always a challenge, you know, trying to find a balance between where we're pushing the envelope and still staying true to the roots of this dance form. So that is something that we do keep in mind also, that we want to see people pushing the envelope within the sphere of belly dance. And sometimes we do have performers that have more of a background in modern dance or other kinds of dance that can, you know, that are making some contribution that can help inspire the belly dancers in the audience. And so we do pick some really stellar performances who are sort of on the edge of, you know, modern and belly dance, or maybe more in the lines of modern, but in general, we want to have a strong belly dance presence at the shows because it's the theatrical belly dance conference.
All right, well, it is almost time to open this up for question and answer, but before we do that, if people want to participate in the conference, how can they do that? How do they get started?
You can go to theatricalbellydance.com. That's our website, theatricalbellydance.com. And the information about, we are going to be announcing our teachers roster incredibly soon. And the registration this year is on eventbrite.com. So you can look up New York Theatrical Belly Dance Conference or Theatrical Belly Dance on Eventbrite. And that link would also be, on our website. And you can get the special early coupon discount if you sign up before we've announced all the teachers, which is happening very soon. We're kind of double confirming all of our teachers. It's a little bit of a late process for us, but it's the commitment for teachers in our conference is a pretty big one, and so we want to make sure, that we create a really integrated program at the conference, and so we're kind of just making sure all our people are on board for going forward. It's really a little bit different the way we structure it than other conferences that I've been a part of, and I think the result is different also. But so thanks for everybody's patience because we don't have that quite up yet online. But go to our website, join the email list, and also on Facebook there's a group, the New York Theatrical Belly Dance Conference, and a like page, New York Theatrical Belly Dance Conference. And if you, like that page and you join the group, then you'll also get updates there. And stay tuned because the big announcements are coming, really very soon. And we have had a lot of people already register, even without the teachers being announced yet, because people are coming for the event because it's always an amazing event. Even, whoever we have with us, it's always just a fabulous time. I don't know what to say. We're biased, but it's really, you can talk to people who've gone or teachers who've taught before at the conference because it's a unique event, I think, in our community, and we want to keep it that way. So,
all right. Well, in that case, let's go ahead and open it up for questions and answers. So if you have any questions that you'd like to ask our guests, you can unmute yourself. So the way to do that if you're on the phone is by pressing **. If you're on Skype, you can press ** on your Skype keypad. And if you'd rather type in questions on the webcast, there's a little box on the right-hand side. It's got what looks like a little speech bubble, and you can type in your questions there. So if anybody would like to ask a question or share their favorite thing that they've learned today, we would love to hear it.
Or anybody who's been to the conference before who, has a question or comment for us, too.
I don't see anybody going unmute yet. Once again, that's ** on your phone or on your Skype keypad. Okay.
We lulled everybody into a sleep-like state.
Hi there.
Hi there. It's Candace from New Zealand.
Hello.
Hi, Candace. Thanks for calling in again.
Hi, Candace.
Hi. Cool. I just wanted to ask for some advice I would love to put on a theatrical belly dance show, and I've got lots of ideas and concepts, but I just don't know where to start with actually producing the show. Should I, talk to a theatrical consultant? Do I need to get a script writer? Should I just try and do it myself? I'm just wondering if you have any tips or advice for the next steps of putting the dream into reality.
Hmm. What kind of, do you have an idea for a concept, or do you want to have different kinds of acts, or do you want to have one long narrative story?
It would be one long narrative story. I have a few different concepts that each one would be a separate show, but one would be a storyline with, one like some lead characters and that would follow through. But it would all be mime dancing. It wouldn't be any spoken word. There might be some help with voiceovers or something, but, yeah, it would be one long narrative.
Do you have people to collaborate with, or would it be just yourself?
It would be people that would be – I have a troupe of dancers here, and we would work together on it. And I would also invite dancers from around the country. We're quite a small community here, but very collaborative. Mm-hmm. So it would be great to invite dancers to join in the project.
I think if you give, like, some if you have, you know, people that you're working with, you can maybe create a story with different pieces that, you know, are each individual pieces. Or, you know, depends on the music, I think, too. Like, if you have one long piece of music or many different pieces of music, and kind of what are the points of the story, what are the elements of the story that you want to tell. Or sometimes people create a theatrical show based on a theme. I know, like, Neon, who produced DVDs for both me and Anasma and World Dance New York, she in New York had created a couple of interesting theatrical shows on a certain theme, and I think made DVDs into a few of those, like the tarot card show, or some other themes where...
Fantasy belly dance.
Fantasy belly dance.
Or the zoo.
So if you have, you know, a theme, sometimes it may be something that you want to have your vision that goes over the whole thing that you're directing. Or it may be the type of thing where you give, you know, assignments to each different group. Say, okay, you know, the theme is, I don't know, the theme is, you know, loss, or the theme is, I don't know, joy, or the, you know, or whatever. Or give people different emotions to create pieces around, and different, you know, see how it fits into your overall theme. That you can maybe give a different card to each group that's coming up with something, or a different card to each person that's coming up with something, and then see how those individual pieces fit together over an arc. Or you may already have an arc in mind, and you can just give out assignments for each section, or it may be something that you do yourself. So there's a lot of different possible ways of approaching it.
Okay.
And just from... I'm going to jump in on my practical level. I say find your space and rent it and give yourself a deadline, so then you have to jump in and just swim.
Yes. That's a good idea.
I like that.
Don't make it too soon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but has anyone worked with outside consultants? I was just wondering if that's valuable in your experience.
Actually, yeah. I think especially if you don't have theatrical experience yourself, or acting or directing experience yourself, it's a very good idea to get a director or an acting coach, or even a writer, somebody who can... you know, somebody who you feel comfortable working with. But I know a lot of dancers in the New York area who don't come necessarily from a theater background, like they have a dance background but not necessarily a theater background. I've seen several people hire directors to help them, you know, to help them shape their ideas. So I think it could be very valuable to bring in a consultant, especially if they get what you're trying to do. You know, it has to be somebody that you connect with.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, and also, depending on the space, you might want a lighting designer.
Yeah. Lighting can make a big difference.
My personal experience also, yeah, because lights is really a technical thing that you cannot invent if you, you know, there's technical words that you need to know, and it's good if you have somebody to translate your vision in something that's a language that can be understood by a technician for lights. And my personal experience with a director, I wish I had taken a director for 1984, because I was wearing every hat in the show. Designer, producer, choreographer, dancer, director, blah, 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 blah. And so when it came to being at the show, like, I could manage everything up until the show because I could wear one hat at a time. But once I had to be rehearsing with lights and nobody was outside to check my lights when I was a dancer,
I
was very
so important.
Yeah,
and
so
you have
important
to be able to delegate certain things, especially if you're going to be in the pieces. You cannot be, as you work with the video and in the creation process, having a coach, having an outside eye is so helpful. And, for example, when we are with a belly queen in the process of doing the Silk Road project, the week before the show, Casey invited a few close friends to test the show and see what was working or not. And we did do changes the last week according to feedback. And now I get to work also as a choreographer and an artistic director on a project called Urban Jungle. And I'm going there for 6 weekends, and I get to be outside of the piece, and it's such a relief for them, I mean for me especially, because I don't have to be in the piece. And I think because I have this outside eye and my experience as a director, I know how to create the transition. So, for example, if you give a task to the different dancers around the country, it would be fantastic, and I think it adds a lot if you're able to synchronize some sort of transitions and maybe build in 2 days of residency earlier, like before the show, if it's possible logistically and everything. But if you have those little transitions that add so much for the audience, I think it makes our whole community grow, and it's already a wonderful process that you have this desire. And now we can witness, I think, around the world that there's many shows that are built like this around the theme. So I think all those little things that we add will make a difference and help our scene, you know, be stronger for audiences.
Yeah.
I want to chime in on what Anasma was saying, how important it is to have that outside eye. Because if you are performing in the show, you cannot direct yourself and perform at the same time. And especially when space and time are at a premium, you don't have time for somebody to video you and then you look at it and go back. It's not like a movie making. You need to actually have somebody out there who can be your eyes when you are on the stage. And you need either an assistant director that you really trust or a stage manager that you really trust. And if you're directing the show and you're in it, for gosh sakes, you've got to have a stage manager. I should know this. I grew up doing theater, and I learned the hard way so many times, just like Anasma did, that, you know, it's so important to have that outside eye and a support team that you trust that can tell you whether you look good under that particular light or not, and just to be really honest in the moment, or, you know, or give you feedback after, whatever is, you know, the most politically expedient. But that's so important to have those backups, because you need it much more than you do in just an average dance show. I think it's important that somebody be on the outside saying whether that narrative arc is reading, coming across, whether the lighting contributes to your message, etc.
Yeah,
and thank you also so much. One last option that you have, I mean, just to close quickly, is that I've seen some shows, belly dance shows, that invited actors and worked with directors. And, I mean, frankly, it was one of the top best shows that I've seen in my life. So sometimes it's also nice to just trust, or you have to find the right team, but just let people who are experts of those things help you and guide you and do it for you and work with you hand in hand, and make sure you have good communication with the director. Make sure they understand the everything that you have to face, the time restrictions that you might have, the distances, because also sometimes it doesn't work out just because of how you manage the situation and because people are not aware of all the different constraints. So, voilà. You need to be clear with what time you have for them if you work with actors, and, you know, what you want from them. As clear as you want, and then keep communicating.
And then you need to put it together, a proposal, and bring it to the theatrical conference.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you know, next. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bring us there and we'll help you.
I've been following the theatrical conference for a while, and me and a bunch of actually my students have looked at it many times and thought that's the next one for us to visit. So maybe in the future we will be seeing you. Yeah.
Well, the next one after this will be in 2018. So who are listening in, this year is 2016. We're doing it every other year because it's a very big event for us to put together. So 2018, probably June, so you can start aiming yourself for that if you're not ready for this one. But come if you can. I mean, I know it's a big trip from New Zealand, but it's it helps. You get so much inspiration in the classes and seeing the shows at the conference that it may give you a lot of ideas, anybody who's listening, that it will give you a lot of ideas towards what types of things you might do yourself. I know Anasma and I always get ideas from the teachers who come to the conference for things that we might want to add to our own classes and just a difference in our perspective. And that's one of the reasons we do the event, even with the huge amount of work it is, just because it feeds us creatively to see other people's work. Yeah.
And just a little note, I will be in New Zealand in November, so maybe see you there.
There you
I'm
go.
Actually hosting
yeah,
you, Anasma.
Lucky. Yes, exactly. So,
I'm Candace. I'm your host.
yeah, that's what I figured. So I was like, "This is weird. You're not mentioning this."
I had to reschedule my New Zealand tour, but I'm looking forward to coming back. So.
Yeah, and I'm really sad actually, because I am doing the Silk Road show. It's coming to Australia. It's in Perth right now, and it's going to Sydney and Brisbane. And I thought you would actually be part of the show, Anasma. But I see that there's another dancer in the role that you had originally played. So, but it's okay because we'll see you in November. So it's all good.
Yes, I'm happy about this. I'll see you another time. I wasn't able to come to this tour with them, but next time, and I'll be with them in Europe this summer. So, but I'll see you in November.
Okay, cool. Thanks
for calling, Candace.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Candace.
Thank you so much for
listening. Thanks a lot. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and mute Candace. If anybody else would like to ask a question or share their favorite tidbit that they've picked up today, we would love to hear it. You can press ** to unmute yourself.
Give us a tough question, people.
All right, we've got nobody yet, so it's last call.
They're intimidated by... No, don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated. We're very nice. Most of us.
Yeah, not me.
Mm-hmm. Ah! No, she's nice. She's pretty nice.
All right, then. I think we are going to call it a night. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. And thank
it was
you
a
so
pleasure.
Much. Thank you so much, Kelly,
for having
Ryan, and Asma.
Thanks for your
thank
fabulous
you.
This is the end of our call.
Era.
Oh, my pleasure. So our call
and,
is over, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. So we do have a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members. If you'd like to join us in there and have some private discussions there as well, I'll send you out a link to the group. Again, this is a private group, so you'll have to be approved before you can join, just so I can make sure that it's just Belly Dancers. So just click on the join button. That will send me a message, and I'll add you within a day or so. I'll also include a link to the call recording in case you want to listen again and pick up any more details, as well as a link to the Theatrical Belly Dance Conference, so you can check that out. I'll also have a link to our feedback survey, so you can suggest topics or speakers or improvements. Go ahead, Rania.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, stay tuned because we're going to have some big announcements over the next few days and week or two about the conference this June, which is the last weekend of June. We have an official hotel, the Hotel Pennsylvania. If people want to bunk with other dancers, it's a very short walk to the Ripley Greer studio where our events are. And try to come. You're going to have a good time.
All right. So our next call has not been scheduled yet. All right. So the next Clubhouse call has not been scheduled yet, and it's not coming until June because I am taking a sabbatical this spring. Like a lot of dancers have, I'm taking a couple months off of my external responsibilities, and I'm just going to practice and deal with my local classes. So these are always really nice.
Yeah, enjoy.
Kind of... reinvent your artistry, so I'm really excited about that. So I will be reachable in the meantime, but I'm not going to be putting as much stuff out there as I usually do. So if you want to keep up on other stuff that's been happening, the very best way that you can do that is to check out the Clubhouse archive.
As of today, we now have 39 episodes for you to listen to, and you can find those all at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse-archive. And until next time, happy dancing. Have a good spring, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Good night.
Long happy dancing, everybody.
Evening. Good night for me. Bye.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.